Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. And back again this week, special guest, Matt Chin. What's up, fellas?
What's going on, guys? Happy to be here.
It's a beautiful Saturday. Internet was down for the entire morning, so I'm glad it's up for the pod. Perfect timing.
Internet is back. The NBA is full of news. We got plenty of things to talk about. Before we get started, just a reminder, you can listen to NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and OTGBasketball.com. So let's get started with the Nikola Mirotic trade. The Pelicans sent over Jameer Nelson, Omer Asik, Tony Allen, a top five protected first round pick, and the Pelicans received Mirotic and a second round pick. What were your thoughts on this trade, guys?
I think it's really interesting from both sides. Obviously, this is one that's been rumored for weeks, and they just had to figure out the financial details, especially with Mirotic's second year option. I think it's pretty clear that Dell Demps is all in with this team. He's not ready to give up on Anthony Davis yet, as much as Twitter might be clamoring for him to do that. And I think they're still going to give DeMarcus Cousins a max offer, maybe not max years, but through 2021 when Anthony Davis's contract runs out. And Mirotic is not going to replace what Cousins' value is or anything like that, but he's a solid rebounder, 9.2 rebounds per 36 minutes, and he stretches the floor for them. I do wonder if Davis is completely comfortable still playing the center position, especially now that they've lost out on Greg Monroe. But it's nice to see that New Orleans, who's such a small market franchise, is being aggressive at the trade deadline, despite what happened to Cousins last weekend.
Yeah, you make a lot of good points, Matt. The only thing I don't like about this trade in terms of the Pelicans is it's another first-round draft pick gone. Obviously, the pick wasn't going to be anything great because of how they're playing this year. But as Preston Ellis, I know once this trade went through, I'm sure he was a little bit upset, our Pelicans guy, about them losing another first-round pick. Because the only first-round pick they still have on their roster the last, like, several years is still Anthony Davis. Like, no one else on this team is from a draft pick in the first round. Which is very, you know, strange and odd. I think I would have liked this trade a lot more, too, if they got Greg Monroe. Obviously, they got Mirotic. You know, he's been really hot this year. I mean, hopefully he can keep it up for them. I'm sensing a cold spell will come, especially once he tries to get integrated in the new system. But it's a solid trade for both parties. The Bulls, you know, they get an asset. They get a draft pick, and then they're going to waive Tony Allen, who the Cavs will probably sign. And then Jameer Nelson are going to get a run too, but I think Jameer Nelson will probably get waived too, and that's somebody too a contending team could use.
Yeah, what do we think that Mirotic is going to bring to the Pelicans? Obviously, you guys mentioned he's shooting 42% from the three line. He's been a hot scorer. He's on one of these hot flashes. He's been known to be streaky. Do we think he'll stay hot with New Orleans, or he'll cool off?
I mean, he's been super hot, so I wouldn't be surprised if he cools off, especially because it's going to require a little bit of a gelling chemistry period. But I do think he fits what they need in a lot of ways. DeMarcus, he's a better shooter than DeMarcus, and I think anytime you have Rondo as your point guard, you need to maximize the number of catch-and-shoot three-point options that you have. And I think, you know, he's someone who didn't want to be in Chicago at all. He was a very disgruntled player, I think. The writing was on the wall that he was going to get moved. So now that he has kind of long-term set, now that they're going to pick up his option for next year in New Orleans, I think he'll offer some decent floor spacing on a team that's actually surprised me. I thought they were going to be one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league, but they've been top 15 in terms of three-pointers made per game and three-point percentage. I do like the fit there next to Davis and with Rondo.
Yeah, that's a great point with, when you have a Rajon Rondo, a point guard that can't shoot, you definitely need some bigs that can stretch the floor. So that's interesting. What do you think about it contract-wise? You mentioned it, Matt. They picked up Mirotic's next year. So that's 12.5 on the books. Obviously, they're already high in that cap number. They have to deal with DeMarcus Cousins' contract coming up. Obviously, he's a free agent. What do you think that means in the salary world?
I mean, I think it's interesting just because – if you're Dell Demps, you're all in, right? Like, this is, you're trying to impress Anthony Davis enough to stay there. Like, there's been rumors about New Orleans relocating if things go south. So, like, this is what was holding up the deal earlier in the week, was picking up Mirotic's next option. And, like, from his perspective, like, yeah, you should not approve a trade because technically he has a no-trade clause because it was a 1 year plus one. He shouldn't approve that unless they're going to pick up his money. And for them, that's what they needed to do to get it done. And they get a second-round pick back from the Bulls as well. And the ability to shed Ashik's money is nice. So financial-wise, I mean, they keep his bird rights. They have Cousins' bird rights as well, so it doesn't affect their cap as meaningfully as, you know, if they were going to get like a Tyreek Evans or something like that who doesn't come with bird rights. So I think they just needed to bite the bullet, and that's what they did to get the deal done.
Yeah, and the Bulls get their the best Chicago Bull of all time in Omer Ashik back. So
reunion,
everything's right in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, so what do we – obviously the Bulls side, they just picked up another first-round pick for their rebuild, so that's great. But what do we think about the Pelicans playoff-wise? Obviously, I think it was reported yesterday and today they picked up Terrence Jones on a 10-day contract and Emeka Okafor, who hasn't played in the NBA since 2013. Where do we think the Pelicans can land the playoff picture?
Toward the bottom of the West. I mean, I thought with Cousins and Davis, they had, you know, a chance to go to maybe the 6th or – maybe even 5 seed, but now I see the Moors 7 through 9.
Yeah, I agree. They're going to be battling for that, the bottom two spots in the West. And they'll probably end up getting an 8 seed and then get swept in the first round by the Warriors.
That's honestly a win for them for what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean it'd be the second time too.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, true.
One other thing that I want to toss out there just from like the big picture market perspective is like Chicago gets the first round pick, but look how much they had to do to get that pick. Like I think first round draft picks are such a hot commodity because teams don't have cap space. Like they had to take on $22 million in dead money from Ashik, and they had to give up a second round pick, which is slotted at number 47 right now, which is a pretty decent spot just to get that first round pick. So I think it's indicative of like how much teams are kind of hoarding those first round picks, knowing that cap space is just not going to be out there in 2018.
Yeah, and that Ashik contract is no joke. I think he has 3 years left. I think the last year is not guaranteed, so they could stretch him like next year and make, you know, save themselves some money. But you're right, getting a first round pick. Personally, I don't know if I'd want to give up a first-round pick for Mirotić just because of his inconsistent play. Corey and I have talked about it in the past. He seems like a guy that can be really hot, really cold. But like you mentioned, for New Orleans in that market, trying to make that push and make Anthony Davis happy, it makes sense. But let's talk Greg Monroe. Obviously, you mentioned he didn't sign with New Orleans. He signed with Matt's Boston Celtics. 1 year, $5 million deal. They used that disabled player exception. What are your thoughts on Monroe and what he can bring to the Celtics?
I mean, obviously, there's a huge fit there, and I was nervous, you know, covering the Celtics, and I think a lot of Celtics Twitter was nervous that he was going to go to New Orleans because there was a clear path to 25 minutes. He's from New Orleans. They could sell him on the starting center role. So that's something that Boston could not offer. I still think Aron Baynes is going to get a huge chunk of the minutes just because of his defensive value. The timing was the most interesting part of the buyout for Monroe, in my opinion, is like a week before the trade deadline. I'm kind of going through my head this past week, like what was the Suns thinking? But I've come up with this theory that I think Monroe's camp knew that Boston's $8.4 million DPE was out there. And the media was starting to float all these rumors earlier this week that Danny Ainge was going to use it to absorb Tyreek Evans. So Monroe's camp moved fast. And I think they gave Phoenix a discount in the buyout negotiations, and like we'll never know what that money actually was, but I think they started to panic that $8 million, and it ended up being a $5 million contract, which is still more than what New Orleans or Oklahoma City could offer, was out there. But Monroe obviously offers, he's the best rebounder on the team now, he's the best interior scorer on the team, and I think even though he has his defensive woes, the Celtics are such a great defensive team, and Stevens is so good at hiding defensive liabilities that I'm not terribly worried about that aspect and that weakness of his game. So I think it's a nice fit, and it's exactly what the Celtics need because they really lack a true center outside of Aron Baynes.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off of pretty much everything you just said, Matt. Perfect analysis of Greg Monroe to Boston. You know, obviously he's going to give them rebounding. It's funny to be how little Phoenix even used him. And you know, they started using him this past month to really, I thought, like up his trade value. And like you said, it was very strange, obviously, with, you know, what we got 6 days left or whatever, and they buy him out instead of trying to trade him. But he's going to address a rebounding issue in Boston. He's going to be a nice scoring punch off the bench. And like you mentioned, you know, Brad Stevens hit Isaiah Thomas better than anyone probably could have last year defensively. And it's going to be the same thing with Greg Monroe. They'll just do different things to make him less of a liability. And he'll probably fit in a nice, you know, 20 to 25 minute role for them.
What do you think was the main reason for signing with Boston? Like Matt mentioned, New Orleans, OKC. I think there was a few other teams interested. Why do you think he chose Boston? Was it the money or was it the chance at a championship?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, there was definitely more minutes in New Orleans than there are in Boston just because Aaron Baines has been so fantastic for them defensively. And I don't think they're going to fully get away from Daniel Tice because he's starting to play a lot better and he's becoming a lot more confident in his offense. But Monroe last year was the first year he's ever been in the playoffs. And he was actually fantastic off the bench in that series against Toronto for Milwaukee. So I think, you know, he must have some interest in getting a deep playoff run. And, you know, Brad Stevens has a track record of maximizing every single role player. So that's not a bad equation and someone to hit your wagon to as you go into free agency this coming summer.
I think it's got to be a little bit about money. And this is a place where he can really up his value for next year. You know, if Isaiah Thomas, you know, let's just say like a what if he stayed in Boston and had like another year like last year, someone would have paid a boatload for him. And who knows if he would have been the same player, you know, in a different system. As we clearly tell, the Boston Celtics right now, Brad Stevens is a top three coach in my eyes. He still gets slept on, but there is no one better, I think, at utilizing guys at the best of their ability. Because every single guy from the starting lineup last year, you know, between Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and Isaiah Thomas, you know, none of them are having good years, really. They're all having down years. And whether that is because of their new fit or whatever, I think it's just a credit to how good Brad Stevens is getting the most out of his guys and using them properly.
Yeah, Matt and I were speaking of that before we started recording. I think that's a big factor, coaching and Brad Stevens getting the most out of his guys. It's appealing to players and going forward in free agency, it'll definitely help. But one sour note to talk about, sadly, another injury in the NBA. Malcolm Brogdon, partially torn quad, out 6 to 8 weeks. And they just got Jabari Parker back. It really sucks for the Bucks. Similar thing happened to them last year with Chris Middleton and Jabari Parker. What are your thoughts on Brogdon going down and what it means for the Bucks?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Milwaukee is only a couple games out in sixth place and, you know, two games up on Philadelphia and Indiana for that final playoff spot. So this is going to be a big stretch for them. I think Matthew Dellavedova, look, they gave him a ton of money a couple seasons ago, and he really hasn't panned out as much as I think they wished he had. Like, Brogdon kind of fell into their lap as the rookie of the year last year and took all that playing time away from Dellavedova. But I think it's his time to step up as a veteran, someone who's been in some big spots, obviously starting in the finals for a couple games a few seasons ago. And then the combination of Jabari Parker and Middleton are going to have to really step up as well offensively. I think Brogdon brings a lot of toughness on both ends of the floor. I read a stat that the combination of Parker, Middleton, and Giannis have played 0 minutes together over the past two seasons, outside of last night when Parker came back. So I'm curious to see if there's going to be an adjustment period, but like, look, Milwaukee, they don't have a lot of time to really figure it out on the fly. They're trying to, you know, maintain their playoff positioning. And I think Brogdon is someone who's been a great glue guy for their rotation. And I'm interested to see, you know, how they adjust to that kind of injury.
It sucks. We're in this same, like, you know, this roundabout cycle with the Bucks where they get somebody back and somebody goes out. Which is incredibly frustrating because this is a team that I have like such high hopes for, and I can't see, you know, I want to see everybody on the floor. The Brogdon injury sucks, and that's arguably their best perimeter defender. I know Bledsoe's very good, but, you know, Brogdon's been already known for his defense. They made a great point about Dellavedova. You know, he's shooting 37% from the field, 38% from three. You know, this is a guy who's not worth that contract he's getting right now, but he'll get a chance now to get some big minutes. But the Bucks are just in a weird place, and they really need to make another trade. I don't know if they actually go after DeAndre Jordan. I know there's a ton of rumors, but I wouldn't be surprised if management starts pushing heavy for some kind of different change. With already making a Bledsoe move, they're obviously hungry to try and change up the roster.
Yeah, obviously Brogdon's a nice complimentary player. Like Matt said, he can fit into a whole bunch of different roles. Like you said, DeAndre Jordan trade could be on the table. Quick shout out to Jack Manuel, just dropped a trade deadline article about DeAndre Jordan, so check that out. But do we think the Bucks will make another move? I think reports came out that they probably won't. Do we see them adding a point guard or anything, or they'll just stay pat until Brogdon comes back, hopefully?
So they were mentioned as one of the suitors in Woj's article about Tyreek. I don't really see the fit there. I think, you know, between Bledsoe and Tyreek, that's a lot of ball dominance. And obviously you don't want to take the ball out of Giannis's hands. If they can figure out a way to get Jordan without giving up too much, I mean, that would be something to, you know, at least raise your eyebrows at, because he would give them a lot of defensive protection at the rim, you know, some ability to do some lobs and dunks at the hoop. But if you get DeAndre, he's going to opt in to next year. I really think he's not going to make that max salary that some people are talking about. I think, you know, he has the $24 million option next year. So, I mean, that's your core going forward for next season. It's Giannis, Bledsoe, DeAndre. And how far does that really get you? I mean, maybe the conference finals at best. Like, I don't see them getting past Boston, or who knows what Cleveland's going to look like next year, but Philly's going to be improved, and you know, Washington might be a little bit more healthy next year. Toronto's still very relevant. So, like, I'm not sure if you want to go forward with that as your core. And I think a lot of it has to do with how Parker looks. Obviously they don't have a huge amount of time to gauge how Parker's going to be, since the trade deadline is, what, 5 days from today. But yeah, they're in it. John Horst is in an interesting position right now, because if you do DJ, that's like, you're committing to the future, in my opinion.
I'm not a huge fan of that fit either. I mean, when you look at Bledsoe, not a great 3-point shooter. Obviously, Giannis, not a great 3-point shooter. DeAndre can't really do anything outside of the paint. If you were to keep Jabari Parker, he's not an amazing 3-point shooter. So I think the spacing would be kind of messed up. So like you said, you'd have to really invest in that decision.
I'd aim for Whiteside before I aim for DJ.
Yeah. I've heard a couple Whiteside rumors. It seems like it's unlikely, but actually talking trade rumors, that's what we're going to get into. I got a list of trade rumors. We're going to kind of go through each one and what we think about it. Obviously, we've heard about the Joakim Noah situation. Him and Hornacek got into it. The Knicks asked him to not be with the team anymore. They're looking to move him before the deadline. Obviously, it's going to take at least a first-round pick to move Noah's contract, or maybe even Frank Ntilikina. What do we think is going to happen with Joakim Noah?
I don't think anything's going to happen. First-round picks are just too valuable, and his contract is an albatross.
It's the worst.
And I wouldn't attach Ntilikina, because, like, are you really that pissed off with him that you're going to get rid of your lottery pick that is in his rookie season? Like, to me, I just don't see suitors out there for Noah.
And Frank's had good moments when he actually gets minutes. It would be so, I mean, it'd be very Knick-like, right? It'd be very Knicks to trade their first round pick and their rookie this year along with Joakim Noah. But I'm with you, Matt. I don't see anyone wanting Joakim Noah in the first place. And it's not like this guy is an NBA player anymore. He's just too old. The injuries have gotten to him. And I'm a big Noah fan from his Florida Gator days. It's just not – his time in the NBA is just over. And I find it funny, though, of all players, he got into it with Jeff Hornacek. Like, what could you have possibly been arguing about? Like, that was so bad that you are banned pretty much from team facilities.
I think, I've just heard rumors. I've talked to a few Knicks fans. I guess there was some incident where, you know, the Knicks had played Golden State. They arrested a ton of guys, and Joakim Noah was told he was going to see minutes in that game and he was going to be able to play a good chunk, and I guess that he didn't. And then something happened at practice, and they just got into a heated exchange. I wouldn't have been surprised, though, if they didn't see eye-to-eye the whole season. They don't seem like two that would get along, and obviously Noah expected to see some minutes when he came back. It didn't happen at all. Is a buyout possible, or is this contract just too ridiculous?
I don't know. I'm looking at it now. $37.8 million over the next 2 years in dead cap space. I just don't think it's – I mean, they're in a tough position because they can't play him. They probably should just shut him down and keep him away from the team so Porzingis and Ntilikina can really develop a chemistry without distractions. So to me, like, that dead cap hit is just too tough to get off of, to let go of multiple first-round picks. Like, they're just getting out of the Carmelo, like, draft pick frenzy to Denver. Like, I think for the Knicks, it's important for them to hold on to their draft picks in case they do find someone who they can pair with Porzingis, because I don't think the New York market is as dead as it has been in terms of allure to frontline players.
Yeah, especially with Porzingis there. You know, Porzingis definitely is an attractive player to play with, so that could be something. And I think for the Knicks, if they're smart, like Corey said, as long as they don't make a Knicks-type move, they're not really that close to contending. So sitting on Noah's contract's not that big a deal. Just spend some more time building up your roster, developing your players. What do we think about Willie Hermann Gomez and Kyle O'Quinn? Do we see one of those guys getting moved?
Yeah, I do. I think you got to trade one of them, only because there's so many centers on this roster, big men. You have to decide like what direction you want to go. And I think Hermann Gomez, especially after how he played last year, I mean, I don't get why he's completely out of the rotation there. I mean,
defense, I believe.
Good. Is that really why? I mean, it's not like Kanter gives you much defense. I think even Kanter could possibly get traded. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys get moved. I know the Warriors were tied to Kyle O'Quinn in a rumor recently. I would love to see Kanter traded, by the way, just because it would be hilarious to him, you know, give his loyalty to another franchise, and then they just, you know, all right, business decision, got to go.
I think both Hernan Gomai, that's how I'm going to refer to them plurally, both Willie and Billy and Wancho are out of their respective rotations, but I still think there's a lot of intrigue about both of them. Like, they're in their early 20s. They're on rookie salary scale deals, like less than $2 million, $3 million a year. So I think the Knicks like should capitalize, and even maybe the Nuggets should capitalize on that kind of intrigue that people still have about them.
Yeah. Honestly, Hermann Gomez on the Knicks version, he did a pretty good job last year. I think he was second team all rookie. He had some impressive post moves, and I think you could work on his defense. He definitely has a nice skill set to him. So we'll see what happens with the Knicks. A report came out, I believe, yesterday that everybody on the Hawks is available. Who do we think is moved from the Hawks?
Hopefully not John Collins, but everyone else, I would be down for that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. John Collins is the only guy that you probably keep. I mean, Marco Bellinelli, Ersan Ilyasova, they seem like key names. Dwayne Dedmon's been a name mentioned a lot. Kent Bazemore, another guy. Dennis Schroeder could definitely help a team. So I don't know. I think the Hawks are just trying to grab some assets. What do you think, Corey?
I mean, there's a lot of guys I wouldn't mind seeing on a different team. Like Taron Prince. I mean, he's been solid for them. Yeah. He's had some big games. I mean, Kent Bazemore's contract kind of annoys me. But, you know, he's a high-energy guy. We talked about him kind of maybe if the Cavs wanted to change up things. I'm with you, though, Matt. You can't trade John Collins.
Yeah, you got to have something to have the fan base attach themselves
to. Yes, you got to hold your head to something, yeah.
Yeah, and like, go ahead.
Does that mean Dennis Schroeder's also on the market, or is that?
I've heard of Schroeder being on the market before. I heard that rumor as well.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about like Ilyasova and Bellinelli, those are the kinds of floor spacers that can just sort of fit seamlessly into any contender's roster. Like, I don't think you have to overhaul your offense to fit them in. So those are guys like for teams that strike out on Lou Williams or they strike out on Tyreek that they could look to for maybe some second round picks or something like that. But Atlanta really should be focusing on ping pong balls. I watched them against the Celtics last night. They're a team that, like, you can tell their head is just not in it. They hear all the noise and stuff. The Celtics dressed 11 players last night, and 7 of them were rookies, and they blew the Hawks out. Like, yeah. I know it was a 9-point game, but it wasn't that close.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Hawks kind of know it's tough when you're a bad team, and you know eventually early in the season it's easier to kind of grind out wins. Like, no one knows they're going to sleep on us. But at this point, you know what you're getting from the Hawks. They're playing a lot of young guys. If I'm the Hawks, I'm sitting on Taurean Prince and John Collins. I wouldn't trade Prince because I think you probably want to have that young wing around. And you don't really have much of anything. So I would probably sit on that. If I'm them, just grab some assets and keep building forward. Like you said, Matt, tankathon, try to get that high pick. But going back to DeAndre, go ahead, Corey.
If you could get Prince, though, like, I mean, that's one of their more intriguing assets, in my opinion. You know, that's a guy who's young and finally, like, coming into his own at the age of 23 already.
And he might be able to bring in a decent amount. Like, he has 2 more years left. He signed – 3 more years left. Signed for $2 million next year, $3 million the year after that. $4 million qualifying offer in 2020, which someone will pick up, and then you get his restricted free agency rights. Like, that is someone that, like, you would be able to definitely get a first round pick for just because of the asset value that he brings. But at the same time, he's 23. Like, he could theoretically be part of their rebuild, part of their core for when they do kind of rise back up after, you know, they're tanking for the next couple seasons.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that you could see starting on a contending type of team just with his skill set, not being a number one, two, or three option, but just being one of those complimentary guys. So interesting decision for the Hawks. Obviously, when teams are looking at it, it's like, you know, how far do we want to go in this rebuild? Do we want to go completely, or do we want to keep some of the guys we have around, or what are we thinking? But back to DeAndre, we mentioned him before. He's been tied to the Cavs, Bucks, Blazers, Heat, Magic, and even a few more teams. Do we think DeAndre gets moved for sure, and where?
I do think he gets moved. I'm still not sure where. I still feel like the Cavs are just sitting there like with a doomsday button, just like sitting right in front of them to like make just any kind of trade to shift up the roster. And like I don't want to say he ends up in Cleveland, but like I still feel like that's the place he's gonna end up, just because of how everything has been. If you trade Blake Griffin, realistically, you got to think they're going to overhaul the roster in general. Because I just don't know why you'd keep DeAndre and Lou, you know, any farther if you're getting rid of. You know what I'm saying, like, it's just how the trades have fallen so far. It just only makes sense for DeAndre and Lou Williams to be next up.
And they technically don't have max cap space, even though they got rid of Blake Griffin's money. Like I was talking about it earlier, DJ's $24 million option. Like, I think he's opting into it. So the Clippers don't want to have that on their 2018 cap space. So like there's an incentive for them to get rid of him now if they're really going to try to market some premier free agents over the summer. So, I mean, the Clippers still have a lot of work to do. Like Lou Williams is still out there. There's plenty of rumors about him going around. And yeah, maybe it is the Cavs. Maybe like they're finally willing to get off the Brooklyn pick and go all in and just say, you know, screw it. We're going to try to appease LeBron again, even though they've done that countless times over and over again. But I think that's the best fit and probably the team that's the most desperate at that point, who has a need.
What do we think about a trade like this? The Clippers send DeAndre, Lou Will, the Clippers pick, to the Cleveland for salary matches with either being Tristan Thompson, Amon Shumpert, and then they send the Nets pick.
I don't think you need to send another pick if you're going to send DJ and Lou Will.
Well, I'm saying if they send the Nets pick because it's such a high pick that...
No, I'm saying I thought you said the Clippers are sending a pick to Cleveland too.
Yeah, sending Detroit's pick because just to kind of balance it out because they don't want to give up, you know, the lottery pick, and this is the way they kind of entice them, because I would say probably the Nets pick, the way they're playing, is probably going to be more into that 7 to 10 range, where you're probably looking at Detroit's pick, what do we think, like 17 to 20? So I don't know. I'm just saying if
Cleveland, I would take Avery Bradley before I took Lou Williams.
Okay.
I like that trade, but for like what they need, like they don't need another score first point guard. They have like 17 million of them already, none of which have been playing very well at all. But like Avery Bradley is someone that you can match up with Kyrie Irving. You could match up with Steph Curry if they even make it that far. He's been there. He's been those guys' kryptonite to the extent that those guys can have a kryptonite.
And so, I could see Avery Bradley picking up some extra juice playing with LeBron. Yeah. I don't know. And LeBron just gets a lot out of guys, and that could be a guy that I think would pop his game up.
So DJ and Avery Bradley, that is something that I think if you're Kobe Altman, like we're talking like Nets pick should be in play for that sort of package.
Yeah, that's definitely intriguing. I kind of forgot Avery Bradley was there, but I think that'd be a guy I would move to, especially on the expiring. If I'm a team who's looking to possibly go into one of these rebuilds / I'm going to try to make a splash in free agency, I want to get value for all these expiring contracts that I can. You know what I mean? Like if you have Avery Bradley expiring, you have Lou Will expiring, you know, try to get something for him. I think when you package these players, you're going to be able to get a better pick than if you were just going to trade one straight up, especially with the salaries trying to match up. But moving on, Tyreke Evans, another guy who's been in a ton of trade rumors. Where do we think he lands? Boston's been a big spot for him.
The one thing I want to say about Avery Bradley quick is I read something this morning that the Thunder are now like in talks or like are they interested in getting him? I think that would be a great fit for him. He wouldn't have to have such a huge offensive load. He could just play his defense. I mean, he's way better offensively than Roberson, even as bad as he's been struggling. What were you saying, Nick? Tyreke Evans?
Yeah, where do you think Tyreek's going to end up?
It's funny because, like, you know, if you asked me last trade deadline, if Tyreek Evans was even in any conversation, where would he go? Like, I'd be like, you know, I don't know. But it's just funny how the resurgence of Tyreek Evans has been this year. He's been phenomenal. It's got to be a contending team. I know Boston's interested. The money aspect is just perfect for Boston because he's not that expensive. I really don't know where Evans ends up. Boston's an interesting place. Maybe Cleveland if they make some kind of trade to get some kind of pop off the bench.
Miami's been mentioned, I think.
I would like to see Miami. I would like to see, like, the Wizards make a move if they wanted to push that. But, like, again, like, I don't know what the
Come
Wizards
on, I love Satoransky.
Right. Yeah. He's the new GOAT. Trade John Wall. Yeah, I don't know. Tyreek Evans is interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, so Woj put out all the suitors in his January 31st piece, and he mentioned Boston, he mentioned Philly, Milwaukee, Denver, New Orleans, and then I've seen stuff about Miami as well. So I think the holdup that people have been talking about with Evans is, like, who's going to give up a first-round pick for them? And outside of Boston, like, those other teams that I just mentioned, like, those picks, those first-round picks, they could be in, like, the late teens, early 20s. Like, that's high value in this market right now. And Evans does not come with bird rights if you trade for him because he's on a one-year deal. So, like, re-signing him is going to take additional cap space, or it's going to take some sort of exception. And a first-round pick is just, like, super rich for that. So I'm not entirely sure that Memphis is going to get what they're looking for, a first-round pick. So, like, would they settle for 2 second-round picks? Or something more creative that I thought of is, if they can't get a first-round pick, how about getting, like, a young, expiring player who has restricted free agency rights who won't affect their cap space? Because they have $123 million committed to their 2018 cap, like, between Gasol and Conley and Parsons. So, like, if they could get, like, a Julius Randle who they can match any offer sheet for. Or I've heard a lot of rumors that Marcus Smart is falling out of favor right now in Boston because they're just fed up with his immaturity. Like, they could match any sort of restricted free agency offer that he gets because, you know, those guys come with their bird rights. Like, would they be more willing to take that if they can't get a first-round pick versus, like, 2 second-round picks or, like, young, cheap developmental players on a $1 million deal? Like, that's something that I would start to look into if I were Memphis, now that it's pretty clear that people are reluctant to give up a first-round pick for him.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Memphis could use some young talent, and it kind of gives them some option. Obviously, with their cap books locked up with that, like you said, Conley, Gasol, Parsons. So see what happens on that front. And obviously, Evans' contract makes it interesting, too, being expiring. And like you said, no rights to him. But Wes Matthews, another guy mentioned on the market, the Mavericks are asking for a first. I personally wouldn't give up a first for Wes. What do you think will happen with him?
And that's another team who, like we've already mentioned these last couple of guys, everyone wants a first, right? The draft picks are just the valuable asset. This draft class so far looks really good. I don't know. I'd be really hard. If I'm giving a first round draft pick for Tyreek Evans, like, that's different than giving one to Wes Matthews. You know, Wes Matthews, he's not the guy from Portland. The Achilles injury did take, you know, like, a half a step away from him. There are games where he's, like, 2 for 13 shooting. The next night, he's, you know, he's hitting his threes and he's decent. He's just so fluctuating. And I'd be hard-pressed to give up a first, especially because he's older. You know, I don't know. They're not going to get a first for him. That's just, you know, selling high and hoping they're going to get it. He's – the package you mentioned for Tyreek Evans, Matt, with, like, a couple second-rounders maybe. Like, I could see that in, like, a young asset for Wesley, but I don't see him getting a first.
I mean, the thing with him is, like, the thing that I like about Wes Matthews' game is that, like, if you're a contender and you're looking for someone, like, he doesn't need the ball in his hands. He could be a pure catch-and-shoot player if he really needs to be. But he's going to opt into his $18 million option next year. I think that's a no-brainer for him. So, like, you got to think about your long-term cap space. Like, do you want Wes Matthews taking up $18 million of your – call it $110 million cap table? Like, no. That's yeah, I mean, I don't. So, like, what contender? And then at the same time, you got to match salary if it's a team that, you know, is contending. And I don't know, there aren't a lot of teams out there that just have $18 million sitting around for no reason.
Yeah, you'd have to give up dead money. You'd have to give up a bad contract, like a contract you don't want. And that'd be the only way I'd be willing to give a first maybe for Wes Matthews, if I got to drop off something disgusting like a Joakim Noah contract. But other than that, I think Wes Matthews, obviously getting older, big contract, Achilles injuries don't age well, so I wouldn't be a big fan of that. Orlando, another team that's been active in the trade rumors, obviously Nikola Vujicic, Evan Fournier, Elfrid Payton, and now recently Aaron Gordon's been mentioned in the rumors. Do we think any of these big names get moved from Orlando?
I mean, if Aaron Gordon is involved in any trade, it's going to be a lot going back to Orlando because he's a restricted free agent too, I believe, right?
Yep, he is.
Right, so that's value. I don't think he gets moved, but I definitely think, you know, Fournier, he's gone. Payton, he's gone. Hazonia, he's probably gone. I think they're going to fire sale it. I mean, if you look at anything around the Orlando Magic after how hot they started, it's just sad. You know, Frank Vogel and every press game, post-game conference I've watched him talk at, he looks like a defeated man. And I watched him for 6 years in Indianapolis. I've never seen that man look so defeated. Like, a couple days ago he had one. He was just saying how, you know, I'm playing with a bunch of kids. You know, it's just, you know, we started out good, and then all of a sudden everybody forgets how to play basketball. And I was like, wow, like it's getting really morbid down here. Like, it's just, it's a killing field. I definitely think they're going to sell out on a lot of these guys, maybe even Biombo, but, you know, they just got to start fresh. I mean, Jonathan Isaac hasn't really been around because he had the ankle injury, and then he doesn't play a lot. It's going to be a time for them, I think, just to reboot it.
So, like, I think Vogel got handed a pretty terrible hand when he took on the Magic's roster. Like, they went bananas for Bismack Biyombo just because he had a couple good games in the postseason a few years ago. But then they thought, like, oh, you could play him at power forward next to Nikola Vucevic, which was never going to happen. And at the same time, then they're like, oh, well, maybe we'll try out Aaron Gordon at the three along the wing, which was pretty idiotic in my opinion as well. Like, the reason why I would entertain the idea of trading Aaron Gordon is, like you said, Corey, he's going to get a ton of, I mean, if it's a team trading for him, they want his restricted free agency rights. They are invested in him long term. And to me, Jonathan Isaac should be the power forward of the future. And I just don't know how Isaac and Gordon will fit next to each other because, like, Isaac is close to 7 feet tall. And I think he's the prototypical stretch four who has, you know, some skills and some ball handling ability. So, like, if Gordon gets a massive contract, like an Otto Porter level deal, like, do you want to invest another 4 years in Aaron Gordon if you're the Magic when you have Jonathan Isaac as your theoretical power forward as the future? Like, I think Gordon is a really special player, but to me, their fit next to each other is a little confusing.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue. I think a fit has been a problem for a lot of Orlando players in the past. Obviously, we could talk about all the guys they've moved. What do we think is the ceiling of Aaron Gordon? And, like, what kind of package could they get for him?
He can hit a bunch of threes for a stretch, and we'll think he's a three-point shooter. And then, yeah. No, I mean, I think his ceiling, it's
All-star level, or is he all-star possibly, or?
Well, let me give you a comparison. I think you guys are both going to agree. Like, he's kind of like Blake Griffin, right? It's like a younger version of Blake
Griffin. You stole it right from me.
he's an athletic guy. Yeah, he's an athletic guy, throws down the hammer. He has shown glimpses of perhaps being able to develop a jump shot, which Blake Griffin obviously does have to his game now. But, I mean, that's what he is. And I don't think he'll ever reach Blake Griffin's level. The one good thing about Gordon is he hasn't had any injuries yet. Like, anything to hurt that pop off his, you know, his athletic ability. He's going to be in the dunk contest again this year. But I think that's his ceiling. It's a developed Blake Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, I think Griffin is still a better ball handler and a better facilitator than Gordon. But, like, Aaron Gordon's only 21. He still has just incredible athleticism, whereas Griffin, you can see his athleticism since he got into the league has been completely usurped, and he's, like, a below-the-rim player now for the most part. He's really kind of transformed his game. So that's always what I've seen his ceiling as. But I've always been very cautious to, like, consider building my team around a player who's, like, athleticism first, especially once they get to their late 20s, because you know that it's going to fall apart at some point. Like, Gordon's not close to that. He's only 21. So for the right situation, like, you could build with him long. You could build with him for the next couple of years. But, like, I don't know. Players like that, to me, like, you have to have enough foresight to figure out that they're going to be able to develop some skills where they don't have to necessarily rely on just pure athleticism.
Yeah, it's definitely an intriguing situation. What type of – you think someone's going to throw a max offer at him in a restricted free agency, not being the Magic and forcing them to match?
I mean, are they going to pull like what the Nets did with Alan Crabb and Tyler Johnson and just force the Magic to use their cap space?
I mean, I'm not throwing it completely out of the window. I don't know if the Nets are interested in Gordon, but I would not be surprised if that was a thing that they did again.
I love that the Nets do that, that they just like force teams to use their cap space.
It might come back to bite them, though, because yeah, Alan Crabb right now is not living up to his contract, and they made him pay that.
The first time when they signed Alan Crabb to a restrict, and then the Blazers matched it. And the same thing with Otto Porter.
I would personally, if I had Otto Porter right now, I'd be very happy. I wouldn't mind paying that man the money. Alan Crabb, not so much. Tyler Johnson, obviously, I don't think has been that bad either. But like someone wrote an article, this is off topic, but what the Nets do, not only are they trying to get these players, but they're also messing up other teams' cap books. Alan Crabb signing that.
I love it.
Like they were just so screwed. Talking about the Nets, actually. What do we think they do at the deadline? Obviously, Damari Carroll's been a name mentioned. Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie. Do we see these guys getting moved?
Carroll. I see Damari Carroll on the move. It just makes sense. You know, for what they, you know, for getting the draft picks they got, you know, along with Damari Carroll, they can arguably shift him out and get more draft picks for him now because of how good his value is. So I would love to see them trade Damari Carroll just for the fact that he could produce the Knicks. The Knicks. Sheesh. Could produce the Nets, you know, 3 or 4 draft picks.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, they got a first and second when they took on his salary dump, and now they possibly can move him for another first. Joe Harris, to me, is an intriguing guy for a lot of teams. I think the Nets have a decision. If they trade him, that means that they weren't planning on re-signing him this offseason. And if they keep him, that means they want to keep him long-term as their sharpshooter. Dinwiddie is probably the most intriguing case where I don't think the Nets are actively shopping him. But I think if somebody came and offered them a really good package, they might take it.
Yeah, I mean, those first two guys, Harris and Carroll, that you guys talked about would be nice with most teams because they can just do a lot of catching and shooting. I think Carroll has kind of revitalized a little bit of his value compared to where we saw him last year with Toronto. Like, people thought that was like such a terrible contract, and now it's really not looking too bad. But Spencer Dinwiddie, I think now that he's, 24 years old?
Yep.
You know, that doesn't really necessarily fit their timeline. And I think, you know, maximizing D'Angelo Russell's minutes is something that they should be interested in. And Dinwiddie has a non-guaranteed salary of 1.6 next year, which is really tasty if you're a team that's looking to add him. I was listening to the Dunked On podcast mock trade deadline, and they had Dinwiddie moving to the Nuggets where he could be in competition with Jamal Murray. I think that's something that's really interesting. Obviously, there aren't a ton of teams that are looking for a starting point guard, but even in a backup role, Dinwiddie has proven to be a really serviceable player. He has the salary of a backup player, so I think if the Nets, you know, put him on the block, there could be some really intriguing suitors out there.
What do you think they could get for Dinwiddie? Do you think they could get a lottery first round pick or no?
I don't think so. Just because they only have one more year. I mean, it's just next year's, even though it's a great salary, the 1.6, I mean, he's unrestricted in 2019. And if he plays the way he's playing right now for the next couple of years, then you know, that's going to be a pretty sizable contract. So, I mean, maybe a late first round pick. You'd have to find the right team. Something like the Spurs would be really interesting with Spencer Dinwiddie, because I think like Parker's on the back end and DeJounte Murray is not ready yet. And like they're in an interesting spot because they don't know what's going on with Kawhi, but Dinwiddie could be a nice bridge between to just allow DeJounte to develop for a year or two more.
And obviously connection, Sean Marks and the Spurs, they wouldn't mind making a deal with each other. But moving on from the Nets, let's talk Lakers, the team they faced last night. They've been in a ton of rumors. Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr., all the main topics. Out of those three, who gets moved?
I think Clarkson is probably like the easiest guy to move right now because he's been so good in Lonzo Ball's absence. I haven't been fantasy, so I know how good he's been. But he's on that friendly contract, which was at the time he signed 4 years, $50 million, which in that crazy offseason was one of the better contracts, obviously. So I think he could definitely be traded. I think he does get traded. And then Julius Randle, you know, I wouldn't trade him personally if I'm the Lakers, because I think you could play him at a small ball center, but it just doesn't seem like they want to keep him, and they don't necessarily utilize him properly. So I wouldn't be surprised either if there was a package deal with Clarkson and Randle somewhere. You know, maybe like the Hornets, if the Hornets wanted to like blow it up a little bit and move some contracts or something. But if you're getting anyone from the Lakers, they're going to want either expiring deals or probably draft picks. They're not going to want to take on any more contracts, as we know, because they're trying to free up as much as possible.
Yeah, Clarkson's a nice candidate to be moved. I've seen a lot out there about how he's kind of the Cavs' contingency plan if this George Hill thing doesn't work out, which it seems like it's not working out. Like, that was, you know, on the 1 yard line, it seemed like 10 days ago, but we haven't heard much about it now. So Clarkson, I believe, is also a Rich Paul guy who's LeBron's agent. So maybe LeBron would be pretty happy to get Clarkson in there, and any little small move you can do to get, you know, LeBron's people in the same place is pretty nice. And then the thing with Randle, I mean, I agree with you, Corey. He can definitely play a small ball five. He's still young enough to be part of their potential rebuild. But if they don't plan on re-signing him, his restricted free agency rights are valuable. Like, I talked about it as him as a candidate to Memphis. Like, if they could figure out a three-way trade where they send Tyreek somewhere and then Julius Randle goes to Memphis and then whatever else goes to the Lakers – like, teams like that who are up against the cap and up against the luxury tax, but they want to be able to get restricted free agency rights on a young player that can maybe be part of their core moving forward. Like, those are the kinds of players that – or those are the kinds of teams that I think Randle is a good fit for.
Yeah, Randle's an intriguing guy to me. Like, he seems like a guy that just keeps getting better, and I watched him play last night, and he's a strong dude, and I think he could definitely play that small ball five in the right situation. So he'll be a guy to gauge. Any rumors that you guys want to talk about before we get out of here?
Lou Will. Can we talk about Lou Will?
Yeah. Where are we thinking?
I mean, we talked about him a little bit, but like, what do you guys think? Would you rather have Tyreek or Lou Will if you're just going this season only?
I mean, if I need a playmaker, I think Tyreek does a little bit a better job of like running the offense and getting his teammates involved and kind of setting guys up, where I think Lou Will's more of that pure scorer. Obviously, this year he's been a little bit more of a playmaker. But I'm looking for pure scoring. I'm going with Lou Will. If I'm looking for more so playmaking, I think I might go with Tyreek.
Yeah, I'm with you, Nick. And the one thing we have to keep in mind, too, with Lou Williams, you know, the last several years when he's gotten traded at the deadline, he really hasn't had good second halves with that team that he's been traded to. You know, last year when he was having a really good year with the Lakers. He got traded to Houston, and, you know, he was okay, but he wasn't, you know, sixth man Lou Will.
He cooled off in the playoffs.
Right, and that's another thing. Like, I just think fit. Like, and there was in some interview he mentioned, he was like, yeah, he goes, Houston wasn't that great of a time, or whatever, about, like, the fit and everything else. But, I mean, it'd be so hard. I'm so hard-pressed, especially the year Lou Will is having. You know, you put him on a contending team to come off the bench, you know, it's a game-changer if he actually performs how he's been performing. Because right now, you know, the confidence meter on a guy like Lou Williams, you know, if he touches the ball, he's like the basket is an ocean to him. He's just tossing it up and it's going in.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you guys in terms of like a playmaking, like someone who can run an NBA offense. I would rather have Tyreek, especially because he's a little bit bigger. He's probably a better defender. He can play both guard positions. But I said earlier in the podcast that, like, you know, all these teams are reluctant to give up a first round pick for Tyreek. I actually sort of think it could be the opposite with Lou Will, because he comes with bird rights. So, like, if you're a team that's trading for him, and I really want to see him go to Philly because I think they could use his services a lot. Like, you can re-sign him and not worry about your cap space. Not that Philly has a lot of financial concerns. And Lou Will just has, like, a longer track record of offensive success versus Tyreek.
Yeah,
like,
more consistent.
Tyreek's numbers have come down a little bit, which was not surprising because he was, like, blazing hot beginning of the season. But like, I trust Lou Will's offense a little bit more than Tyreek's overall. So I think he might be able to fetch a first round pick for the Clippers. And if you're, you know, Doc Rivers or Lawrence Frank or whoever's running the show there, I would definitely think about moving him for a first round pick if you can get it.
Yeah, Honestly, I think it's a possibility where you look at Tyreek Evans, where, you know, Corey kind of made a joke before, like, who thought we'd be talking about Tyreek Evans at the trade deadline? Yeah. Lou Williams is a guy that we talk about every year, consistent scorers, won Sixth Man of the Year, where Tyreek, no offense to him, he could kind of fall off at any point and kind of go back to what we're used to. But see what happens with that. Any other guys you guys want to mention?
The one team that I have heard, like, nothing from that I think should be buyers if they can figure it out is the Raptors.
Yes.
Like, they are in prime position to take over the East. Like, Boston is susceptible, and obviously Cleveland has its weaknesses as well. Like, why aren't we hearing more about the Raptors trying to make a, not necessarily like a big splashy move, but something that can, like, give them an upgrade either along the wing or, like, replacing Valanciunas? Like, I know it's hard to get off of his money, but, like, if I'm the Raptors, I'm, like, all in with this core. Like, it's fine to give up a first-round pick because you have so many young players like Caboclo and Anunoby and Powell and Van Vliet and Siakam. Like, all those guys are still developing. Like, you don't necessarily need your draft picks moving forward. So, like, if I'm running the show up in Toronto, I would really think about finding someone who could give us an upgrade immediately because I think the East is wide open.
Yeah, for sure. Or even not, you know, maybe you want to keep your first round pick. Maybe move some of these young guys you have coming off the bench because
yeah,
some of them will have intrigued other teams. Like, I mean, like, Toronto has probably an underrated, you know, cabinet of assets. Like, they have a lot of good young guys on their bench, a lot of nice role players I think people would be willing to take a chance on. And then they still have their first round picks, what they probably don't need. So if they really wanted to make a splash move, they could, or if they wanted to make a small move, they could. I mean, I agree with you, Matt. I think Toronto should, like, last year they kind of went all in and it didn't work out, but I think they should take another swing before they kind of run out of this 3-year period where they have Lowry, Ibaka, DeRozan together, and then they make a decision after that.
Yeah, if they were to tie in, let's say, Valanciunas, some sort of draft pick, and then, like, one of their young point guards, either Dallin Wright or even Fred VanVleet.
Norman Powell's been mentioned, too, as a guy they might move.
Right. I mean, I would even think about trading C.J. Miles. I mean, obviously his worth isn't as much, but I mean, he's not having a great year for them. And he's only playing like 18 minutes per game. I would definitely try and package to get some kind of veteran. Let's just say, you know, for shits and giggles, they were to make a move like Lou Williams. You know, having like a dynamic scorer like that off the bench could be huge for Toronto.
Yeah, it definitely. I mean, any type of boost to that team could definitely give them over the hump. And it'd be big for Toronto and that city and overall basketball in Canada, I think, if they really had a trip to the finals. But that's a lot to still happen. But anything else before we get out of here, guys?
That's it. I don't have any other trades.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for today. I have a good feeling we'll probably be back again in the next few days. We're going to probably be dropping a few pods next week. As always, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Corey. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And you can check out the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and otgbasketball.com.